the seminar also for giving me this pointer, because I cannot use that. I'm a tennis player. If you want to play squash with me, I can play squash too, but this is too heavy for me. And somehow I will use that in a part of the talk for showing how basically black hole can cool down. But I will tell you later. Yesterday I heard a very nice talk by Stefan, and he pointed out the importance of so-called bottom-up models. So starting from phenomenological facts, we can come back to, without any a prioristic, basically, point of view, to the very fundamental theory of quantum gravity. So now I'm reading an email I received from Michelangelo Mangano at CERN theory group. And just to say that my perspective is somehow like yours, saying that, okay, hello, Pierre, I'm translating from Italian. In the night between Friday and Saturday, we are going to inject the first protons in the ring, in the LHC, and within 10 days, we will be able to have the first collisions at 900 GeV. And within Christmas, we will reach 2.4 TeV, and within the end of January, 7 TeV. So in some sense, on Monday, we could have the first TeV collisions at LHC. And this is somehow of vital, it's now, therefore, it's a bit of vital importance to get predictions from, let's say, any quantum gravity or effective theory of quantum gravity. And yes, let me, okay, let's skip that. Basically, the production of microscopic black hole is expected both on particle detectors of TeV, provide some conditions, or even better, in the cosmic ray showers, which are basically at energies around, let's say, 10, 20, or even more electron volt. Let me proceed saying why such microscopic black are such microscopic black holes so important. The reason, there are a lot of reasons, but one of that is connected to the fact that in 1974, Stephen Hawking basically claimed and showed that a black hole can emit thermal radiation like a black body. And at that time, it was not yet certain that a black hole could even exist. So now we are sure that Cygnus X1, stellar black hole at 7 light years from the Earth, is, let's say, a black hole, a binary system. But there are other candidates for being black hole, larger black holes. But even for the smaller case in astrophysics, so astrophysically, black holes have, according to Hawking, a temperature like that. And astrophysically, we are in this regime, so with the large masses and the very low temperatures. And since the universe has a temperature of 2.7 Kelvin, basically, astrophysically, black holes cannot evaporate. So because they live in an environment that is hotter than their temperature. So conversely, if you have a microscopic black hole, we have here the profile of the temperature, and we see that a microscopic black hole can have a huge temperature. So we expect in a particle detector, provided the production occurs, two phases, let's say the balding phase, a spin out phase, basically the loss of the charge and the angular momentum, and then we have the so-called Schwarzschild phase, a neutral static configuration in which the black hole can emit radiation. But you see that for its negative heat capacity, as the black hole emits radiation, it shrinks, it loses energy, it shrinks, and it increases its temperature. And then we have somehow a sort of a runaway behavior of the temperature. And people generally say that at the very end, when we are approaching, here is the temperature as a function of the horizon radius, is we are approaching the origin, we can say that the general relativity breaks down, because there we have a singularity, and we would need to describe this final phase in terms of quantum gravity. So somehow it's very important to have something coming from quantum gravity to describe the final phase of a black hole evaporation. Now I put there question mark, because, okay, the situation is very embarrassing because quantum gravity is supposed to merge the two most successful theories regarding the capability, the possibility of doing accurate experimental predictions. We have a general relativity, you know, that the binary pulsar have a period that can be computed by means of general relativity with a 15 digits, very accurate prediction. The same for quantum field theory, if you want, with G minus 2, there are 13 digits. But when we combine the two, we cannot get some that can obtain predictions for this phase, for instance. Indeed, if you consider string theory, for instance, there exist models for describing quantized black hole, but only in the phase, in the near or quasi near, in the extremal or quasi extremal Reissner-Nostrum configuration. Since we do expect that the final phase to be neutral, so this basically condition is not met. And in loop quantum gravity, yesterday I heard another talk by a German friend, and there's the problem that we don't have a clear semi-classical limit, since this stuff basically was computed by, in the early times, by Hawking with simply quantum field theory in curved space-time. And we cannot basically match that, at least in the regime where we know that it works pretty well. Now, since on Monday, we will be able to produce hadron collisions and some quantum gravity effects, it's of a vital importance to get some result, even upon some approximations. I was very pushed to follow a third way based on the so-called non-commutative geometry. It's a simple idea to implement a minimal length to have a loss of resolution in your space-time manifold, having a non-commutative relation for coordinate operators. And in this way, you can somehow get some plaquettes of your space-time basically have a natural cutoff emerging from the geometry. There are also in this scenario, in this, let's say, model, problems, since if we try to write down the equivalent of a general relativity with such coordinates, there are technical problems. I won't enter the details, but there is no complete, fully compelling theory employing this these coordinates. So, being so pushed by the need of getting some experimental, let's say, prediction, I did a shortcut that is somehow supported by at least two technical, let's say, two approaches. Basically, considered a function over since I have, let's say, coordinate operators, I do need to have something which is the most reminiscent thing of a coordinate. And I introduce basically coordinates over some coherent states. Coherent states now in quantum mechanics and in quantum theory are the states that provide the minimal resolution, the minimal uncertainty for the system. And now I'll try to consider a function of, not of a coordinate, but a function of let's say, mean values, expectation values of coordinate operators. And then if you consider that like a field, you see that its Fourier transform has an additional damping term that basically says that at higher momenta, this is a cutoff. And if you do basically, if you write down the field equation, you will see that the source term too has this basically damping factor, a high energy. So the important, the key point is to understand what is the fate of point like. Sorry.
This damping factor come from? Is it related to the?
I forgot to say that we need to have a unique minimal length because non-commutativity basically foliates space-time. and you need to have for unitarity a minimal length in both planes. And it comes from the commutations, basically, if you want.
So you start with the commutation relations that you had before in terms of the theta.
Yeah.
So how does the, what's the relationship between L and theta?
Let me come back. It's the theta is basically it's just a square.
Okay.
Sorry.
You take a constant theta?
Yeah. For now. Yeah.
Let me ask a question. So to me, you make this transition from f to f of the expectation value of x, right?
Yeah.
So can you say a little bit more about how you derive equation 3? Where does it really come from?
But basically, this is just formula. I'm saying that I'm writing down in terms of this columns. I need to do 20 more, let's say, if you're leaders, we can discuss. But what I'd like to stress is the smearing effect that the such coordinates do. Indeed, if you consider in the source term here, conventionally, if you put SP equal to 1, in general, if you don't have that smearing effect, you will get a Dirac delta. But in this scenario, in this, let's say, model, Dirac delta is replaced, if you want, by a quotient whose width is controlled by the minimal length. So we have a sort of smearing effect due to the presence of such coordinates. So if I write down the final equation, you will have basically just a modification of the source term. Okay, from now on, if you want, you can forget everything about non-commutative geometry, and say that I can change the name and promote these mean values like coordinates, and simply write down an equation whose basically geometric part, let's say, this part is unchanged, while formally left unchanged by while the unique modifications are in the source term due to the smearing of these coordinates. So the game I'm going to do now is to, okay, since we don't have the precise, correct, let's say, correspondence between general activity and its non-commutative equivalent, I will try to go back and do the smearing of the source term. Since I have in mind the Schwarzschild solution, this is a crucial point. And the Schwarzschild solution basically is generated by a Dirac delta for the energy density. In this case, I will get a Gaussian in place of the Dirac delta. And now with that, okay, limits works. And now I can go back to the new form of Einstein equations, which basically I would like to match the conventional equations in that limit. So now we can play a new game with this smearing source term, smear the source term, and this is basically what I did. I took basically an energy momentum tensor of this kind, which, okay, in the static case, since I'm looking to the Schwarzschild solution, and I start up with this energy density, a Gaussian distributed energy density, requiring, of course, the conservation of the energy momentum itself. If you plug everything there into this modified Einstein equations, you're looking for an island element of this kind in which you have this phi is the redshift function, m is the shape function. Okay, have in mind that here we have a fluid, if you want, with, let's say, pressure terms that are not the same. So it is a sort of anisotropic fluid, because PR is different from P orthogonal. And plugging everything there, here are the Einstein equations, you need to close the system in additional condition, which is simply the equation of state.
Why can't you directly introduce a smearing into the metric, say, rather than the coordinates?
Maybe you're right, but I'd like to find an analytical solution, let's say. And the constraints are two, if you want, to match the Schwarzschild solution at a larger distances where my L is unimportant. and get modifications where general relativity conventionally breaks
so
down.
You're doing the span at a particular scale, of particular scales. Okay.
Yeah.
Can you follow me back to your smooth Einstein equation, please?
Yeah.
So, what I don't understand is how does your source cell behave under diffeomorphism? Like, is it a, does it behave well? Is it a tensor of the right?
It's a nice Tinor knot.
Yes, the thing is that, you know, if you start transforming the Gaussian, you know, by some transformation of the Gaussian, you modify the Gaussian, you enlarge it, you shrink it, so that
no
does behave well, like, is it a
no
sensible equation, right?
No problem, I saw that. Okay, let me go on. Now we have basically this additional condition, which basically links the radial pressure to the energy density. And here is the solution, the new solution. Those gammas are simply the lower incomplete Euler functions. And you see that, let's check the larger distance limit. If you got here infinity when r is larger than L, say the limit, this collapses into the gamma, capital gamma over 3 over 2, which is equal to square root of pi over 2. And if you plug that inside, you will get the social behavior. Square root of pi simplifies and so on. N is here the total mass of the system is a constant. And depending on the value of the total mass of the system, I have different possibilities regarding the number of horizons. Indeed, if I study this. Yeah, but works. Yeah, but I have a modification of the energy conditions.
Well,
at the origin.
Well, not the origin is some singularity. So.
No, we don't have any singularity. We'll see that.
No. So I understand. So you're doing something like a star. That is, you have finite T00, TRR, et cetera. I just want to, what you're allowed to do, you're positing some T00, you're positing some TRR, T theta, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So you posit that and you solve. So it seemed to me one condition. So you have a Gaussian, so it never really goes to zero, but it's tiny, tiny, tiny. So outside, far outside the width of the Gaussian, it should be the just Schwarzschild again.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Okay, up to exponentially suppressed corrections.
Right, because it's okay.
Okay, if I choose basically this condition for the mass, suppose, there are two horizons. But if I have, for instance, a lower mass,
mm-hmm.
there are no horizons. And there is, of course, also the borderline case. Keep in mind these values, m 1.9L and R0 3.0L, which are basically this terminal case with the one single horizon. Just to grasp the meaning of what's happening, let us compute the curvature tensor at the origin, and you see that here everything is regular. And in place of the singularity, we have a receptor core, saying that somehow the fluctuations of the geometry don't let basically the energy density collapse into the Dirac delta. So we have basically an anti-gravitational effect near the origin, And this is pretty the same of what was tried in the 90s. I can remember papers by Frolov, Mukanov, and Markov, in which they matched basically the outer Schwarzschild solution with the inner, the Sitter core. But in this case, we don't have any matching condition. The gamma function provides the smooth transition between the inner and the outer geometry.
Interface of a stiff equation of state, you're saying you don't need that here.
So, I'm sorry.
In those solutions, you needed like an interface has a stiff equation, like, you know, rho is positive, equation of state. You say you don't need that here.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
And for the case in which I don't have a horizon, there is no naked singularity, but I have an everywhere regular geometry. This somehow resembles a grad star, which is a claimed object by Mosler and Mazur. But since I have an upper bound for the energy for the energy of the system, I call them mini grad star, just to give it a name. Let's go also to see what happens in the large mass regime. And basically, the inner horizon goes to the origin, while the outer goes to the conventional value of the stress case, up to exponential suppressed corrections. Now the point is to understand how this black hole evaporates, and I computed basically the Hawking temperature. So here you'll see that you have here, I'm sorry, the Hawking result, one, minus corrections. These corrections basically are important only in the vicinity of the origin, where RH is comparable with L. So this means that I matched the Hawking result, large distances, but instead of having a divergent behavior in this case, the temperature reaches maximum, and after that the black hole cools down in the so-called SCRAM phase. Now SCRAM is another, let's say, it's an acronym for safety control rolled X-Men. So it's the non-trivial and the ultimate shutdown of a thermonuclear reactor. But since in a nuclear reactor we have a nonlinear behavior of the temperature due to the chain reactions, and when you call SCRAM the reactor, it's basically, it means that a guy with an axe will cut off the wire holding the control bars in order to shut down the reactor. And since this is a very hot object, I use that name just to scram the black hole. It's the analogy works. And in this case, of course, there is no black hole, so there is no temperature. Okay, let me draw the profile. The new profile is the following. And this reveals a deep analogy, if you want, between quantum mechanics and quantum gravity. So remember that Hawking showed that a black hole can evaporate like a black body. And remember that Planck, in quantum mechanics, introduced H-bar. And introducing that, he cured the catastrophic behavior of the black body radiation. And in this scenario, we have the same. Now, instead of having H-bar, we have L. And we have also cured this catastrophic behavior for the temperature. But the difference is the following. For the black body, generally, the curve goes here. Here we have a remnant. Basically, the temperature goes down for a different value, for a value of the horizon radius different from zero. So it means that the final state is a remnant state. And this state is basically governed by the same value we have already seen studying the horizon equations. And it corresponds to the case of a unique degenerate horizon. So another point is the back reaction, if you want, because generally the Hawking evaporation is so strong in the conventional picture that basically destroys the Schwarzschild geometry. In this case, we have a colder black hole, and you can compute basically the suppression of a back reaction. You can just basically, back reaction can be important only when you have the maximum of the temperature.
And but if you compare to have basically a significant back reaction, the emitted thermal energy and the mass of the black hole should be comparable. But this would lead to this, let's say, a little bit of physical value for all. So the conclusion is that the black hole is too cold to basically modify significantly geometry. Another point is, okay, this is quite new stuff, recently published yesterday. And the choice of the equation of state is somehow instrumental. And what I have done in the first, in the Schwarzschild case, is just to require that this part, this is the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkow equation that governs the hydrostatic general relativity equilibrium of the fluid. And in this case, I've chosen basically this bracket to be always zero, but you could have basically the possibility to have these brackets vanishing at the horizon or at the origin in order to have a regular pressure. And of course, also the vanishing, asymptotically vanishing condition should be satisfied. So if you basically proceed with these constraints, so you can have a further choice for the equation of state. And this is the new choice. And this choice basically lets you have a dirty black hole, basically a black hole in a, surrounded by matter. And the modifications basically are here. This basically T not not GRR are not basically the equivalent one over the other. And basically, again, this redshift function is governed by gamma functions. And if you compute the, I don't have the plot because the computer is quite new. And I am not quite able to convert in PDF files since Beamer Latter works only with that. But simply the temperature, the profile of the temperature is pretty much the same of the former one. Apart from the fact this part basically decreases a little bit the maximum of the temperature. But the remnant size is quite the same. Another possibility is to work again with the T of E equation, but choosing another equation of state, requiring that this basically part always vanishes. And if you do that, this corresponds to have this condition. If you do that, you have a wormhole solution. You can see that this is when this guy switches the sign, you have two minus in the metric, you have to cut off that region, and basically you got the conventional wormhole geometry. And here, the trot of the is a transversible wormhole. And the trot of the wormhole is basically supported by the fluctuation, the mean value of the fluctuations of the geometry. Okay, this is really relevant also for LHC because there is a non-trivial possibility of having a non-vanishing cross-section for wormhole geometry too. So LHC could be also a wormhole factor, not only a black hole factor.
Can we go back to your original equation of state? So with your original solution, and I'm sorry, I'm sure this is not stuff. Okay. The original solution, you choose the radial pressure inside to be minus the energy density. So you make you have a fluid. You make an ansatz that there's a Gaussian distribution of the energy density in the fluid. You then choose PR as minus rho. So, and then you solve for P, theta, and phi. Not surprisingly, because it looks something like a cosmological constant near the near the center, you get a matching to De Sitter near the center.
De Sitter core. Right.
Right. So, do you know what is the global structure of your
book? I have the Penrose diagram for that. I don't have the picture here, but it's like the Price-Nordstrom diagram, but apart in the singularity basically are not present. You have basically a regular region in place of the singularity. So you know you can do that very I would like to show you, maybe.
No, that's fine. And then, so somehow behind all this, you have a physical picture, which is quantum mechanical, but everything you've done is classical.
Because somehow we have forgotten that we are using mean coordinates. But this mean coordinate somehow has a quantum origin, quantum gravitational origin. And the signature of that is indeed the violation of the energy conditions near the origin, because there you don't have a classical matter. That's the point, if you want.
Okay.
Let me proceed. I've also calculated the Russell-Nostrom equivalent, smearing out also the electric charge, building up the electric field and the energy momentum tensor for the electromagnetic part. And if you plug everything, again, like in the previous case, you will find another solution replacing and improving the Russell-Nostrom one. Here you have basically the conventional part we already seen, plus the part connected to the electric charge, where m is the total integrated mass at infinity, and f of r is simply a function depending in a non-trivial way on gamma functions. Now, to grasp the meaning of this line element, this is again another analytical solution, you need to understand the asymptotic behaviors. Again, near the origin, I have a de Sitter core, and the manifold is again regular. And asymptotically, we match the conventional Russell-Nostrom case. So if you study the horizons, for instance, now you have two possibilities. The G naught depends both on R, Rm, we fix Q equal to 1 in suitable units. And this is the plan having G naught equal to 0. So if I start from, let's say, a value of the M, I go upstairs and I proceed along the lines, and then I come back, I will find two horizons. Basically, this is the extremal case, basically starting up here, going there, and then there is a unique horizon here. And so again, I have the three cases, charge, massive droplets, regular droplets, like a mini gravity stars, non-extremal charge black holes, and extremal charge black hole. The Hawking temperature can be computed too. So this is the part we already seen. And these are the corrections due to the presence of the charge. You can see that this is always positive, so we do expect that the charge simply reduces the peak, the maximum of the temperature. And so you have here the plot for that. And you see that basically having increasing the charge, the temperature goes down. Now another important fact for particle physics, if you want, is to understand whether the scenario I told you about the sequence of the phases, so spin down, balding, Schwarzschild, still takes place, because it's not said that, again, we have the same, let's say, sequence. And so you need to study the Schwinger effect, basically the possibility for the black hole to produce particles due to its electric field. And you can compute, basically, you can study the field at the horizon, requiring to study if this could be overcritical. So if this field at the horizon can produce particles due to Schwinger effect. And so if you play with parameters and if you write the Q in terms of elementary charge, you'll see that the condition, you just need a single E, single charge, to have an overcritical field at the horizon. This means that the hole will produce particles with the Schwinger effect instantaneously, okay, in the Remo-Ruffini's language, this would mean that the adiosphere radius is much larger than L, the minimal length, and the Schwinger effect, the conclusion is that the Schwinger effect dominates again the early phases of the life of the hole till the neutral configuration. Okay, these are basically four-dimensional solutions, but if you want T terascale gravity, we need to have additional, let's say, spatial dimensions. And we have computed also the extra-dimensional neutral solution. M now is the number, total number of spatial dimensions. And you see that, again, you have a more... Oh, there I missed something. So this is wrong. The neutral part is wrong, so this is the... okay, this is the neutral part with the more complicated extra-dimensional, so multidimensional gammas. So you have a gammas depending of M this time. And this is, don't read that. And this is basically the corrections due to the presence of the charge with a much more complicated terms, simply extensions of what I've seen there. Okay, but again, the properties of this solution are equivalent to what we already seen in the four-dimensional case. We have, again, a regular geometry, and there exists a minimum mass below which black holes do not form. There exists zero temperature black hole remnant. Now I played with parameters, and I put this scale for my minimal length, and I've computed the cross-section for black hole remnants in this scenario, and this is very promising. It's about 10 nanobarn, that with the LHC luminosity would mean that 1,000 black holes per second will be produced. So, but this is assuming that here you have all the maximum temperatures according to the number of extra dimensions. Okay, for MA, sorry.
This is all stuff that I don't know. How do you compute the cross section?
It's simply geometrical.
Meaning?
The square of the radius, the horizon radius.
And so I have two protons colliding. Mm-hmm. It's a big mess. The force, gluon, jets, etc.
The unique way to compute, say, in a rough way, is to assume the geometric cross section, basically the square of the horizon radius. It's simply that. If you have a
this will dominate at those energies. This will dominate every other cross section.
Other, what do you mean? I don't know. in that sense, let's say other particles. You mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because for sure, when I was at CERN, they told me that they have a huge number of events, and they have the so-called pile-up problem. So the electrons is too slow to get all data. So I don't think that this can dominate, because they have a huge number of particles.
Okay. Let me ask a different question. The Tevatron, you know, at Fermilab is not far below TV. So why aren't there already millions of black holes?
But now I'm going to answer your question. So yes, assuming that scale, you see that for the number of extra dimensional, of spatial dimension equal to 4, the five-dimensional case, you have that the minimum mass to have the cold collision is 6.7 TeV, but in this case is actually ruled out at the TeV scale, because one additional extra dimension has to be of 15 kilometers. And we know for sure that the modification of the Newton law basically ruled out this. And so if you have two additional extra dimensions, the number you have is 24, and it is up the 14 TeV of the current accelerator. So in this scenario, LHC will not be able to produce holes.
if we are assuming this scale. So the unique way is the cosmic rays shout, cosmic ray shouts to have some.
So again, where does M0 come from?
It's simply the minimum energy to have a hole. It's the energy of the extremal case.
Right, but you have objects below that mass that just possibly they don't have horizons.
Yeah.
So how come you're not producing those at the spectrum?
Maybe, yes, but those are not black holes, so are particles. I don't know the origin of those.
But Bell, this is based on the assumption that one of our L's.
Yes, that's an assumption. Yeah. It's just an assumption.
Right, but I'm suggesting that the fact that the tetratron is not producing strange stuff, which is.
It agrees somehow.
It validates the assumption.
Is invalidates the assumption that the minimal scale is a TDD by this model. I mean, this model, the idea that the cross section is just the horizon of a black hole, it doesn't come from any fundamental theory, it's just a guess.
Yeah, that's a guess, not a guess of mine. Everybody does that. And I simply redid the same stuff with my horizons instead of the Schwarzschild.
So it's the conclusion. Did you just tell us that with these assumptions that the LHC wouldn't see anything? Right?
Yeah.
Because you say 4 is excluded for other reasons,
yeah.
So we can only start at 5, and there it's already 24.
Yeah.
Right? That's what you said.
Yeah, that's fine. But when I went there in Geneva, CERN, they asked me to study the life of this object because there was some, let's say, speculations about possible risk in producing some objects. Since if you have some metal stable holes in the detector, they could accrete and basically heat the surrounding Earth. And since my holes are colder than the Schwarzschild holes, so they could live longer, and so they could be, in principle, dangerous. And so I computed the black hole lifetime integrating the Stefan-Boltzmann law in this way with the damping factor also in the flux. And now I made another assumption. The assumption is that the minimum mass, M0, has to be 1 TeV. And I've integrated that equation starting from an initial mass of 10 TeV. These are pretty correct values for LHC. And generally, for the Schwarzschild case, you get here 10 as a minus 26 seconds. So they are just resonances. Here we have a longer life, but the experiment will be not dangerous because it's anyway a tiny time. I'm near the final part of my talk. Okay, I just have to tell you that there is a possibility of having 1, 2 on the horizon, the super core, the singular behavior of the temperature is cured. We have the scram phase in place of the Planck phase. The quantum back reaction is an important. We have studied the neutral, dirty, Wolmore charge, and extra dimensional cases projects now. Since hadrons carry spin, it's important to have also the picture for the analogous of the Kerber coil. You're the expert, maybe we can talk about that. This stuff has to do also with the cosmology because the smearing of the source terms could be convenient also to drive a cosmology, an inflationary cosmology without the inflaton, simply assuming such fluctuations of the geometry. There's a paper of a friend of mine about this stuff, but also the role of the remnants and these black holes in primordial black holes and in dark matter, how many remnants do we have now? In this dark matter. The other point is to go in depth with the Arrow and the Hawking effects, considering matter fields and the smearing matter fields, not only the matter which generates the geometry.
The other point is the study of analog models. So there is a possibility of observing the Hawking radiation in condensed matter systems. But in that case, I do expect that my minimal length would be equivalent to a sort of microscopic scale of the condensate that cannot be basically governed by microscopical models. And now, just to do a comparison, in the asymptotically safe scenario, the running counter constant can, sorry, the gravitational constant can be running, and they try to there's a paper by Bonanno, quite recent, in which having that running coupling constant, so you see that gravity becomes weaker at a large momenta, basically at short distances, you can plug this here and get the solution, and get the solution for in the coordinate space. And you see that the scenario of this all is pretty much the same of mine. We have two horizons. Upon some conditions on the choice of a parameter, it is regular. And the profile of the temperature is pretty the same. So if you do the game, this game with my solution, you have that in you could define, if you want, a running G, and you have you got the asymptotic safe G, depending now on this damping term. So this is a coincidence, maybe, but maybe not incidental. Because also, this is the reason why I'm here, thanks to Leonardo, also in the loop quantum gravity scenario, there are regular geometries with a zero temperature final state, and it would be of vital importance to build up a bridge between, say, my phenomenological-oriented models and some more fundamental theory of gravity. So there are three approaches that basically say the same thing, and this sounds very interesting to me. Let me give you some references. This is the seminal paper. This is the paper regarding the lifetime of black holes. This is the review paper I just published about all this stuff, including the charge case we obtained, the exponential case, and so on. I put a final appeal, but it would be the first, very first appeal, because if you got some, as far as I know, there is no single quantum gravity data apart from what you got with the gravitational waves. And that's the final paper regarding wormholes and dirtable calls. Okay, thank you.
Questions, please?
Yeah, what about cosmic rays? What do you expect? What should have been seen or what should be seen in at OSHA?
That's a point. Yes, in Prism, that scenario of a larger range for cosmic rays. But a detailed analysis not yet ready regarding basically the evaporation that I think should be done numerically, maybe, I don't know. This stuff is quite new, so I've just done that, and I'm trying to go both in the phenomenological direction and in the more, let's say, robust quantum gravity formulation. So.
Okay, but just to ask a question. Even in your scenario where your minimal black hole in the six dimensional scenario where the minimal black hole mass is 45 TeV with 10 to the 19 electron volt protons hitting the atmosphere, your center of mass energies are higher than that. So you would expect to be seeing.
Yeah, I expect that the cosmic rays can produce that. Because Okay, depending again on the number of dimensions, that's a
problem. No, but in that scenario, what confuses me is your confident of if you take your guess for a cross section, then you're confident of the production of thousands of black holes per second at the LHC.
Yeah.
But why aren't you therefore confident of some prediction that already OJ should have seen the decay products of a large number of black holes?
The point is that to have, let's say, that's the point. But in OJ, I think that the cosmic rays are quite rare to get, let's say, predictions. So the problem in that scenario is the extension of the detector. So to have, let's say, the production of black holes of 1,000, that's the point. I think we would need a larger detector somehow.
No, I'm confused. If a cosmic ray proton hits 10 to the 17, 10 to the 18,
okay.
We can easily work that out.
They would have already seen that. Okay.
Yeah.
OJ, for now, I don't know that. Because I'm in touch with people working on that.
No, but the question is, so in OJ, they have a model of what will be the constituents of the cosmic ray shower, given some ideas about atomization and so forth. So you have a different hypothesis that it makes a black hole, and the black hole vibrates thermally.
But the answer is the following. If we forget about my model, the number of black holes per second would be 100, not 1,000. It's just an increase of the cross section. So we have the same problem with the Schwarzschild case. So they would have already observed also, not independent of my model.
Right. So what I'm querying is what's the relative. What's the probability that in a collision of 1,000 TeV center of mass energy that you produce a black hole
I don't know, but because that's say a geometrical cross section, it's quite rough. So I don't have the model for that.
No,
so.
Even assuming that your guess is right, how does that compare with the cross sections to the standard processes?
Yeah, that's the thing I have to explore yet.
But I'm interested about the connection with non-negative geometry. I mean, because from some point onward, you just assume it in the in this non-negative geometry scenario, I would expect that the smearing effect is anisotropic somehow because you have theta range of planes. But then you are.
There is another anisotropicity in the fluid, if you want, pressure curve. There is an anisotropicity in the fluid, if you want, because the pressure terms and the radial pressure and the orthogonal pressure are not equivalent in this case. It's not an anisotropic fluid.
So does it mean that you have oriented your theta planes?
No.
What's the connection?
Me too. That's it.
So, would that introduce anisotropy in the smearing?
No, since I start from the devotion. That's it.
Well, that's what I'm surprised. The connection to the devotion.
It's somehow something I skip because my talk is somehow already too long. So, but if you want to enter the technicalities, we'll be able to solve it.
Just can you? What's the basic idea of doing inflation without the inflaton? I mean, what's the basic idea?
Well, basically, you have an exponential source term in time. Minus something t squared. And a friend of mine basically studied the relativity in the expansion and it's like that. And without, it's now this energy profile basically drives inflation without an inflation.
But there's still some source.
Yes, some. Yeah. Okay, the paper is adjusting the archive. So.
Thanks again.